With Levine, yes. Let me tell you what the game plan is. Oh, this is great. I can walk around and be crazy. I am going to speak for 30 minutes and give you a very professional briefing, a PowerPoint briefing. I wore my suit for you. Everyone, please notice the suit. Okay? Yeah, something completely different. And then my good friend Akil Khalid, a blonde, blue-eyed American Mujahid, who may be lost right now, but he'll get here within 30 minutes. See, I just bought him dinner. He will come in and he'll talk about his book, My Jihad. And I'm kind of using him as a counterpoint to me. We also invited that Wired guy, McCullough, whatever, because he makes me look good. So I figured I'd have him as a discussant, and since we dissed each other last night, I thought it was a nice way of apologizing. Not that I need to, but I thought it was a nice way of apologizing. Okay, that's 7 to 8. From 8 to 9, I will then do the everything you ever wanted to know about spying but didn't know who to ask. I'm surprised you haven't had enough of me, but apparently this was pretty popular a couple of years ago when I did it. The original is also available on the web. I don't know the URL, but it's there. Now, from 9 to 10, you guys can do whatever you want. I'm going to go listen to Jell-O. All right? I'm not going to compete with him. And then from 10 to 12, I've invited Jell-O to come join me, and we'll answer questions about the state of the world, if you want. And that'll be kind of a cool counterpoint. Yes, sir. Yes. I don't know how we're going to do time warp management, but I'll be flexible. And this guy in the tux, who is, I guess we should give him a hand.
We are behind now. Our jaw is not available for 10.
Good. Then what I'll do is I'll go to 10 and I will stop. And we will all go listen to Jell-O, and after Jell-O, someone can buy me a drink. The guy in the black hat, okay? And I promised my wife I would be in bed by midnight, so this is I'm hitting 50 this year. No. I know. Well, 2 years ago, there were evil companions with a bathtub full of ice. Yeah, so we're going to have fun. Now, these are my two books, and while we're waiting for techno shit, to get ready. These are my two books. So we're going to hack Amazon.com, and here's how we're going to do it. In the next 3 days, I will watch the numbers of books that are sold. And for every book that is sold on Amazon.com, I will send Emmanuel a free copy. And so I'll take your word for it. He'll take your word for it. So you guys pair up. And maybe one of you buy one of these, and one of you buy one of these, and I will send Emmanuel free copies that match those numbers so that you're getting it at 50%. But what you're doing is you're running my numbers on Amazon.com. Okay? So that's the hack. All right? I promise you, I will watch the numbers. I have this little, every publisher has this little thing, and I will ship him boxes of books. I figure only 10 of you will buy it. So this is not a big risk. But if you want it, it's kind of cool. Let me tell you what's good about these books. First off, you can download one chapter from each for free from OSS.net. The chapter that you can get from the first book is the President's chapter, Intelligence for Dummies, which is the 14 things he should have done after 9/11 but didn't. Washington is whitewashing our intelligence failure, our counterintelligence failure. And the chapter that you can get from this one, which I'll be talking about, is the 15th chapter on the new rules for the new craft of intelligence, which is basically open. I call this book Personal, Public, and Political because I've come to the conclusion that Washington will not reform itself until you make intelligence and counterintelligence personal, public, and political. In the age of distributed information, intelligence is too important to be left in the hands of a secret bureaucracy. Intelligence must be extended. The practice of intelligence, the proven good practice of intelligence, must be extended to the state and local level, and we have to create what are called citizen intelligence minutemen. And we have to create state and local communities of virtual intelligence and counterintelligence. Okay, so I hope we'll have fun tonight. I will be very professional about managing the time. So now that we know, it'll be 7 to 8 for me and Akhil doing kind of structured briefs, and then it'll be 8 to 10 for kind of a free-for-all. I will not undress. I did think about changing clothes for the second session. And then we'll all go listen to Jell-O, which is always a treat. I come here to be refreshed. Do we not have?
We don't have PowerPoints.
All right, you're fired. I need a laptop with PowerPoint. Oh, well, maybe we won't shoot you at all. Okay. So you're going to make this work. Ah, thank you. Yes, we can do questions. I wrote 85% of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization Open Source Intelligence Handbook, which is available on my website. If you go to OSS.net and you click on Open Archives and then click on White Papers, you can get the official North Atlantic Treaty Organization Open Source Intelligence White Book. By the way, blue shirts, I was promised a lot of water. I guess this is it. Okay. And what really troubles me is I have generals that say to me, why do I need open source intelligence? I've got an 11-year-old kid that uses the internet. Okay? I'll talk about that for just a couple minutes. Personally, I'm not a fan of Google. I like Copernic.com myself. It just works better for me. You can download it for free at www.copernic.com. And what I like about it, and I'm no expert, But what I like about it is not only is it a meta search engine that has a number of search engines, although not all of the best ones, but it remembers what you've seen. And so if you want to do the search again, then it just brings up the new stuff, except for the assholes that move the period back and forth so that their stuff looks new. What?
Can you spell the URL?
Copernic. C-O-P-E-R-I-C. Copernic. Not Copernicus, but Copernic.com. That's a good starting point. But the other thing that I've found is doing internet searches is not that effective. There's the deep web, which everyone knows. Most of these search engines are less than 16% of what's out there. And so what you really end up having to do is create an internet table. I like the Word document table form. And over time, what I do is I create a table that has the websites, and then I create a column for ranking. And so I basically have a personalized ranking table. And my second book contains tables for terrorism, genocide, crime, corruption, a whole bunch of things. And those are available electronically as well. So where do you go after the internet? Factiva.com, Dialog, LexisNexis. They're all different. Commercial, premium, fee-for-service sources charge money. And what do you get with Factiva? Thank you, sir. With Factiva, bring up cyber advocacy, Pinkham. And you have my Pinkham on cyber advocacy. You have my permission to copy the entire CD-ROM if you wish. This is good. I'm going to drink a great deal tonight of water. Cheers. Now, let's talk about Factiva. Factiva is the last 2 years' worth of really decent media. It's not all of the foreign language media. I have a tiny little company that has two contracts, both with the U.S. government, which allows me to play like this. I got a staff T-shirt as my payment. And one of the things we discovered, we went out and we identified 396 terrorist insurgent opposition websites. They actually exist. 396. That includes the media sites promoting them. In 29 languages. 29 languages. And you'll see this on a brief. CIA doesn't do 29 languages. Okay? We're talking Catalan. We're talking Urdu and Pashto and Dari and Farsi. Most of our embassy officers don't speak these languages at any level above where is the bathroom. Okay? And this is a really serious thing. Cyber advocacy. Okay. And so you have Factiva, that's 2 years. Then you have Dialogue. What does Dialogue have? Dialogue has dissertation abstracts. It has the Social Science Citation Index and the Science Citation Index. And I have a ranking protocol that allows me to identify the top 100 people in the world on any subject, period. So, for example, I'll go in and I'll go into the Social Science Citation Index. I'll go into International Studies. Okay, put it on show. You can stay here, actually. I think you could be useful. Is that all right? Can I serve you a drink of water? Okay. Here you go. Okay. Thank you. And presto, I have the top 100 people in the world on Afghanistan, and only about 10% of them are Americans. But we don't talk to foreigners. Okay, so our government, I did my second graduate thesis on this, our government is operating on 2% of the available relevant foreign language information. 2%. 2%. This is scary shit. Okay, and then they also have conference proceedings. Most information is 10 years old when it's finally published. 10 years old. Okay? So conference proceedings is a really good way to kind of get ahead of the curve. And then, of course, you have LexisNexis, which has published conference. All right, this is somebody else's brief. And if you'll forgive me, I'll tell you what, I'll point at you. Change it. Thank you. God bless you. Doug Pinkham, who I know from Boy Scouts, is the president of the Foundation for Public Affairs. Their website is www.pac.org. PAC.org. It has an unfortunate association with Political Action Committee, but PAC.org. And they've done a couple of really cool glossy reports on how the AFL-CIO and other organizations are using the internet to do cyber advocacy. And because of the nature of this group, I wanted to just run through this really, really quickly. And I guess I'll just sit here. And could you make this available to Eric? Okay, so if you guys want this, we'll find a way to put it through the 2600 site. What? Oh, okay. All right, and I'm just going to go through these really quick. I just want to share with you another person's mind and experience before I start my own brief. Okay? These are pluses and minuses. This is a cool brief. And I'm not doing it so you can get it now. I'm doing it so you can come back to it later. Okay? Activist tools and techniques. We haven't made the jump. And one of the things that the first chapter of my book does is talks about we need to use open source intelligence, legally and ethically available information, to monitor the assholes. Okay? Then we need to use the internet to link up together and to put all that together. And then we need to use the internet to basically score elected and appointed officials, so that we can then slam their ass when they don't do what we want. Okay? So we're talking here about taking back the power. This is really serious shit. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But this is a great brief from a person who really knows what they're doing. Okay, good. And here's the... Did he not have the website? Okay, good. Now you know that brief exists. And you know that www.pac.org is a cool place to go so that you might have it. Okay, if you would bring up Steele, I'll give you guys my formal prepared brief. Did anyone not get a globe? One of these little blue things. What? Well, then all those people, raise your hands and someone will hand you one. Okay, you with the 20, give them a globe. All right, everybody who didn't get a globe, raise your hand and we will unscrew this. That gentleman with the white shirt has generously handed some out. All right, that's pretty damn decent. Voluntary distributed stuff. I'm reading a lot of books on volunteers right now because volunteers are the future in a lot of ways. Okay, I'm going to do a brief here. New York City is going to get hit again. It's going to happen. Get used to the idea. Because New York City, in the eyes and minds of billions of people overseas, including the 100,000 or so that are really pissed off at us and ready to do something about it, New York City is the eye of the storm for capitalism. There's a hand up there who doesn't have a globe. Okay, good. You're going to get hit again. 9/11 was an intelligence and counterintelligence failure of tremendous proportions. The first chapter in my second book talks about exactly what went wrong. My first book talks about all the things we knew were wrong 10 years ago that could have helped prevent it. Washington is whitewashing this failure. George Bush has a real serious problem with dealing with accountability. His basic attitude is lay no blame because I'd be fucked first. And let's talk about what to fix. I'm very concerned about that. Now let's talk about the real world. Could a blue shirt go out and look for a one-legged guy wearing shorts? Akil Collins is supposed to be right here, and he may be in the wrong room. He's got a buzz cut, and he's got a long red goatee, and he's got one leg. Oh, here he is. Okay. Welcome, Akil Collins. All right. And he tells me there's nothing inside the leg, but I've got to believe he's got a comm suite in there. Okay. One of my favorite people. This is the real world. We're talking about roughly 75 conflicts that are killing 1,000 people or more every year. We're talking about 125 conflicts that are killing less than 1,000 people a year. And we're talking about roughly 175 internal violent political conflicts within countries. Okay? It is a really screwed up world, and you don't read about this in the New York Times. You're not taught about this in your schools. And our intelligence community sucks at explaining this to the president. Okay, Gordon Ehler, who was a very top guy in national intelligence, once said, intelligence is remedial education for policymakers. Let me tell you something. Policymakers are very loosely educated. One of them brags about being a C-plus person. They're very loosely educated. They really don't know shit about the rest of the world. We have senators and congressmen that brag about not having passports because their constituents don't care about anything that happens in the rest of the world. Now, it's your job as citizen taxpayer voters to make sure that your congressman and your senator understands that the rest of the world really matters because we're screwing it up big time. Okay, here's some of the numbers. 32 countries have what the United Nations quaintly calls complex emergencies. This is, and Akil is familiar with a number of them. There are millions of refugees displaced in 66 countries. And when you have refugees, you have crime, you have trade in women and children, you have fantastic disease, you have a lot of issues. There is famine in 33 countries. There are modern plagues in 59 countries and rising, including in the United States. Okay, our water security and our food security really stink. Stink. We don't have public health officials at the airports and ports now. We no longer screen incoming passengers. It takes 4 to 6 days to identify an Ebola outbreak in Africa because most of the hospitals don't know what they're looking for, even in Africa. And Ebola got to Kansas 9 months ago, okay? And we have a CDC and a public health infrastructure that's just trashed. And we have a lot of illegal immigrants that won't go to a hospital because they're afraid of being identified, okay? So Los Angeles is a cesspool waiting to explode, among other things. Nothing against Los Angeles, but It's an issue. It's an issue.
Child soldiers, other issues.
Now, how do we spend your taxpayer dollar? We spend $400 to $500 billion a year while George W. was running us into a deficit. We spend $400 to $500 billion a year on what the military quaintly calls heavy metal. New meaning for heavy metal. We are buying all these aircraft carriers and all these fancy, expensive jets and all these really complex military systems that are useless 90% of the time. Useless. And at the same time, because we are funding what General President Eisenhower warned us about, the military-industrial congressional complex, we're underfunding diplomacy, foreign assistance, education, a digital Marshall Plan, public health, and saving the environment. Yes, sir. No, they don't, especially when you have suicidal martyrs. The question was, is the Pentagon a deterrent? No, the Pentagon is an incentive. Okay? You know, I've got to tell you two things, and I did my first graduate thesis on predicting revolution. Number one, you got to have power that's actually relevant. Number two, you have to be willing to use that power in a thoughtful way, which we're incapable of. I mean, our government today is incapable of executing an informed foreign policy, which someone brought up yesterday. By the way, I invited that wire guy to be up here. I don't know if he's left town or still mad at me or whatever, but I did invite him to be up here. Since Bruce Sterling is not here. I mean, Wired seems to turn them all into a certain kind of creature. Sorry, zing. When it doesn't have too much graphics. I'd cancel my Wired subscription at least once. Okay. So you have to have power that's relevant. You have to be willing to use that power in an informed way. And telling Iraq that we're going to bomb the shit out of them because daddy didn't finish the job is not real smart. Okay? Because it gives Saddam Hussein a real incentive to fuck with us because we've just put his back against the wall. This is stupid. Stupid. And you as taxpayers should be outraged. Okay? So moving on. There are four different kinds of threats in the world. Four. Period. I thought of this in 1988. You've got the Russians and the Iraqs and, you know, the major conventional forces. These are states. These are violent states that have uniforms and tanks, and they very, very cutely, very nicely put up for NSA, hi, our comm center is here. You can listen now. Okay? And then you have low-tech groups. These are violent non-states. Terrorists, criminal gangs, transnational criminal gangs. Ethnic family-based criminal gangs are a real serious problem. Vietnamese, Japanese, Korean, Russian in particular. Well, CIA and FBI have just decapitated, eliminated their ability to deal with global ethnic crime. They moved everybody that was doing crime and narcotics over to counterterrorism, where they still haven't figured out what they're doing. So we've opened the back door, okay? And the mafia today is toasting CIA and FBI for being dumb shits. Okay? And please don't misunderstand me. I love my government, and I love those two agencies, and anything I say that's critical is intended as tough love. Okay? I'm a shitty businessman, so I think government's important. And then you have low-tech seers. And this is basically billions and billions of people who are dispossessed and fucked over. And they see us as the problem. And the World Trade Organization and the International Monetary Fund are essentially the front end of our screw job on the rest of the world. We live in an aquarium. There are all these little islands in that aquarium. And we keep pouring our cesspool into the world. And on 9/11, it reached our nose. Okay? That's what it boils down to. Robert McNamara did a good book called Wilson's Ghost with someone else. I reviewed it on Amazon.com. Which, interestingly, the other favor you can do for me is go to Amazon.com and find my reviews. Just look up any intelligence book and don't worry about time, Akhil, because we're going from 7 to 10. So we've got plenty of time. Look up any review. Where it says see more about me, I've been trying to explain to Amazon.com that see more about me should say see my other reviews. Okay. They had this idea about creating a community and all this jazz. Well, I don't give a shit about these other people. I just want to know what books they've reviewed. And so if you go to that, I've got 294 reviews on national security books and volunteers and C4I and all that stuff, which are also in the annotated bibliography of my second book. But you can do me a favor by voting for those, because I'm competing with little old ladies that read romance novels and guys that review videos and software and stuff like that. And I'll tell you, it says something for America and what America is reading that a guy who reviews only serious... Oh, no, I'd much rather have a new battery. Yes, sir. I love authority figures that are confident. Should have had a new battery. Okay, so I use this for a while. After 9/11, America started to read about Islam and terrorism, and it's absolutely amazing. The public has awakened. The public understands. In fact, I got an email from a woman named Barbara Flaska. I presume she's a middle-aged mother employed somewhere in the Chicago area. And she said, if these people are that mad at us, I want to understand. And I love that. That's one of the coolest emails I've ever gotten. But America, while it's reading, is being unnaturally tolerant of a government that is not doing anything serious. The Fox 5 cable version is Bible thumpers who believe the only book they need to read is the Bible. And I know this because every time I appear on Fox 5 Friends and Family cable version, I get all these emails from Bible thumpers who say that I'm being very disrespectful of the president when I say he's not serious about the war on terrorism. We're not serious about the war on terrorism. I call around Washington, including Congress, at 9:10 in the morning, and no one's answering the phone. We haven't really changed anything that we're doing in Washington other than moved a lot of people toward it. And, oh, by the way, I love the Doonesbury cartoons on the CIA intern. Has anyone seen these? It launched a predator, fired a missile, you know. It's going to take us 10 years to train these puppies. And, oh, by the way, CIA has a 35-year rule, as do most law enforcement agencies. We can't hire anyone over 35. Duh. Maybe we should be hiring hard-ass 50-year-olds that have spent their lifetime overseas and are now ready to do some serious cool stuff for the government, rather than young white boys from Kansas. The reason CIA hires all of its secretaries, including my wife in West Virginia, is because they've never met a Soviet. And so they can be cleared easily. All right? We have the wrong priorities here. We're going after good kids who don't speak a foreign language, have never been overseas, and can get a security clearance, rather than really rethinking. All of you are instantly eligible for my kind of CIA. except for the really good-looking strawberry blonde with black glasses who works for the FBI. It's absolutely fascinating. All right, so we've got some issues out there. Now, Edwin Wilson, E.O. Wilson, has written an excellent book on the future of life in which he costs out what it would take to save the environment. It's under $200 billion a year. It's under $200 billion a year. That's loose change. Okay? That's loose change. Especially if the U.S. puts up $100 billion and then gets the G8 and the rest of the world to do the other $100 billion. And then finally, you have high-tech Sears, which is a combination of state-sponsored electronic espionage, individual criminal electronic espionage, and info-terrorism and info-vandalism and so on. And when Schwartau and I opened this conference in 1994, at which time I had a blue suit, a white shirt, and black glasses, and we played a strobe light with... Thank you, sir. All right, so someone's going to turn this on magically. No, I told you guys in 1994 that you should publish a catalog of vulnerabilities. I mean, this group is as well qualified as any group I know to out the stupidity and criminal negligence of the communications and computing industry. And you didn't listen to me then, and I don't expect you to listen to me now. But I personally think that what the world needs is a really smart consumer reports that outs all the bugs at one place and really talks about this. And I also think we need a national law that requires that application program interfaces be standardized and transparent. Microsoft should not have been. Microsoft should not have been a lawsuit. It should have been a law. Because APIs are the railway, the common gauge of cyberspace. And until you get to APIs, you are going to continue to have Bill Gates as a 900-pound gorilla extracting tribute from everybody. Systran, for example, is a reasonably decent translation program, but it can only do RTF because they can't afford to pay Bill Gates for the secret handshake that would allow them to do PowerPoint slides and Word documents. Okay? So until we get the standardized APIs, we're basically going to have chaos in cyberspace. That's fundamental. And the Attorney General, not Ashcroft, he was busy putting handkerchiefs over Greek statues. The Attorney General actually answered my mail. I'm an elected member of the MIT Silicon Valley Hackers Group. Unlike you, those are the guys that are really rich. John Gilmore, employee number 5 from Sun, is one of them. And I go out and talk to them every once in a while. I listen. And we had a session with John McCartney, the father of artificial intelligence, about this API issue. He's a brilliant man. And so I sent a letter to the Attorney General that was staffed, coordinated with John McCartney and a couple of other people. And they actually called me up and said, hey, this is interesting. But then it flopped because they went over to NIST, which is responsible for standards. And they said, too hard. I think it should be an Internet standard. I think it should be something that Vint Cerf and ICANN and all these guys should be required to promote. Standard, stable APIs that last at least 3 years should be a law. And Bill Gates shouldn't be allowed to release anything until it's been bug-checked for 3 years. I don't buy it until it's been out for 3 years. Okay, moving on quickly. So there are 4 threat classes, but how do we spend our money? How do we spend your money and my money? We spend $500 billion a year on that green square. We spend roughly $20 billion a year on that brown square. We spend less than $1 billion a year on that orange square. And we spend about $13 billion a year on the high-tech stuff only. We call it critical infrastructure protection, and we put it in the worst possible place, the FBI. Mike Vadas is a good man. He's spoken at my conference, but they don't know shit about technology. These are the guys that have databases that can be searched one word at a time. Okay? Congress has given the FBI money for information technology repeatedly, and it has been constantly stolen by the managers who had higher priority executive trips and other things that needed funding. Okay? FBI and NSA, a big part of my presentation last time was about NSA being in the 1970s, okay? You really have nothing to fear from NSA when it really gets down to the nitty-gritty. The U.S. government is in the 1970s with technology. They can't talk among itself, and we're about to compound this problem because we're about to tell state and local governments, as well as NATO, that they have to buy in to this command, control, communications, and computing architecture that we have that is incredibly expensive and largely unaffordable by anybody, including the U.S. taxpayer. What we should be doing is migrating the security to the Internet and making it software security-based so that you can do come as you are, anyone can play ad hoc coalitions at any time. So what we're going to do is we're going to federalize security at the state and local level, which is a massive disaster. You can't do it. It's just pure, pure dumb. Okay, 3 strategic scenarios very quickly, and then I'm almost winding up. What's going to happen in the next few years? Well, there's going to be massive, massive boat lifts and illegal immigrant pushes. In Indonesia, mothers are throwing their children into the ocean in front of Australian naval ratings who are being ordered to stand fast because the mothers believe that throwing their children into the ocean in front of an Australian naval rating is that child's last hope for living. Of course, it's drowning instead. But you're going to see Indonesia hemorrhage people toward Australia. The British are now regretting the Channel because it's a handy little path for Algerians who are trying to crash into the Channel and march to England. They can't afford plane fare. So America, Mexico, China, Russia is going to be Asian within 20 years. Brzezinski says this in his book. I forget what the title is, but it's like Grand Strategy. What is it?
Grand Chessboard?
Yes, thank you. Grand Chessboard. God, I love readers. Grand Chessboard. China has an active policy of pushing both legal and illegal immigrants into the Russian space, just as Mexico has an active policy of pushing legal and illegal immigrants into the United States. Now, my mother was born in Colombia, so don't take anything I'm saying as being hostile to immigration. I wouldn't be here if she hadn't married my father and become an American citizen. But we've lost control of our borders. We have lost control of our borders in terms of people and health and ideas and money and the whole bit. Okay? So strategy number one is massive immigration. Strategy number two, Laurie Garrett has a 750-page book on betrayal of trust, the collapse of global public health. Strategy number two is we will see certain countries that will have massive outbreaks of Ebola or smallpox or whatever to the point that there's no one left to bury the dead. Okay, and this is going to spread because the public health system is such that we can't identify this stuff and contain it before it moves. Okay, and any of you that are sleeping with German businessmen, be aware that one of them at least has probably had a sexual vacation in Eastern Europe, where he has been contaminated with a whole bunch of shit. Okay, and if he didn't go to Eastern Europe, he went to Thailand. Actually, Thailand's getting better these days. But the point is, the world, this stuff is just moving around so fast. Yes, sir? Twenty percent of sexually active people in Leningrad. Okay, are infected with AIDS. And they've also got tuberculosis and strep and all these other things. And by the way, if you get put in a Russian prison, you're almost certain to come out with tuberculosis. Immune tuberculosis. That's right. We've created a whole series of diseases that are now not only immune to antibiotics, they're immune to freezers. Okay, they're temperature resistant. Okay, now, what's the third scenario? The third scenario is we spend some serious money on all of this, which is national security at its root. And that's not something that this president or any president so far is willing to consider. But we have to change our funding. Now, how did we fail? The red square is the world of information. I divide it up into digital, analog, and oral unpublished. Then I divide it up into English and all these other languages. That's as informed a slide as you're ever going to see on what our intelligence community can and cannot do. It sucks. You are being badly served by the U.S. government. You should be pissed off. And you should be writing to your congressmen and senators telling them that the McCain-Lieberman Independent Commission is a good idea and that anyone running in a congressional race this fall is going to be held accountable for being stupid. Okay? Because this is a goddamn disgrace. Now, we spend $30 to $40 billion a year collecting the 5% of the information that can be stolen. The National Foreign Intelligence Program allocates $150 million, one half of 1% of the lowest public estimate of what we spend on intelligence, for what's called open source information in 29 languages. We actually only do about five or six really well. And the director of Central Intelligence has been quoted to me as having said, I will not legitimize open source intelligence as a discipline. We're in the business of collecting and producing secrets. Ouch. You know, Washington is totally out of touch with reality. And Herb Myers said this when he was Bill Casey's assistant. Herb Myers is the author of Real World Intelligence. He was a Fortune editor. In Persico's book about Casey, Myers talks about 15 years ago, he says the DO, the Directorate of Operations, which I would like to see become competent one day, which I was a member of. They only believe in information they can steal. Herb Meyer says they're out of touch with reality. This is a fact. This is a fact. The U.S. government is operating on roughly 2% of the available relevant foreign information because of this massive disconnect between money assigned to secrets and no money assigned to open sources and the proven process of intelligence, which is very, very good, not being practiced by the various departments, defense, commerce, and so on. So what do we do with this 2% of the information? We don't process it. We don't process it in any one place. There is no single central processing network in the United States government. In fact, one of the reasons we're on 2% is because 80% of what we do collect in our embassies overseas is sent by pouch. That's those big orange bags with diplomatic couriers. It's sent by pouch back to the corresponding action officer in the corresponding agency who promptly puts it in a shoebox and forgets it ever existed. It's not in a digital electronic environment where it's readily available to the public that paid for it or to the rest of the government or whatnot. Okay, and this is the relative value of the various disciplines. That's open source intelligence, human clandestine intelligence, imagery intelligence, signals intelligence, and measurements and signals intelligence. And we can do more on that later. So what's the new craft of intelligence, which my second book is all about? And I repeat, for every book bought between now and, let's say, Wednesday at midnight, I will send Eric a free matching copy. You guys put your claims into him. He knows you better than I do. The new craft of intelligence recognizes that in the age of distributed, multicultural, multilingual information, we really need to get our shit together. We can't be blind, dumb, and ignorant anymore. So lessons of history. I read a book by the RAND Corporation called Anticipating Ethnic Conflict. 175-page book with no index, no footnotes, no bibliography. And in the course of 175 pages on anticipating ethnic conflict, it managed to avoid mentioning the word history once. This is quite astonishing. I read the book twice, the second time solely looking for the word history. How can you be that stupid? But that's what your taxpayer dollar is paying for, is shit like that. So lessons of history, and I've got a plan to actually go out and get Islamic history and Chinese history and so on and slice the spines and digitize it and index it and get it in there. Global coverage. CIA does what's called hard target coverage, which is we decide who we really fear. And until 9/11, that was the Russians, the Chinese, and India-Pakistan nuclear conflict in North Korea. And we're apparently still delusional about Cuba being a threat. Okay. And we spend all of your taxpayer money on those five or six targets, and we don't do what's called global coverage. Well, it turns out most of the threats in the world start in festering sinkholes like Somalia and Haiti and Burundi and Rwanda and Indonesia. We don't spend serious money in those countries. Now, I don't think we can do that by ourselves, but what we can do is we can create a web-based distributed burden-sharing system so that at a basic level we share with the Netherlands and other countries, Australia, England, and so on, an open source situation with universities and corporations and others participating. So you basically matrix out the whole thing, and every player takes one box, and that box then becomes part of a processed information commons. And I'll leave that for later after Akhil has spoken. We have to harness the distributed intelligence of the United States, of each nation. One of the problems in Washington is we only talk to people with whom we have incestuous relationships that have established clearances. Think about that for a minute. All right? By and large, the people that are consulting to the intelligence community as well as to the rest of the government are good old boys with security clearances who have never been overseas or haven't been overseas in the last 20 years, haven't actually done original work in the language. We don't like academics because we think they're flaky. They don't like us because we want them to pass a lifestyle polygraph, and they have issues with that. So what we've done is we've cut ourselves off from everybody that knows anything. I mean, I'm leaning to hyperbole here to make a point, which is why I also wore a suit tonight to make a point. By the way, this is a badge. You're all under arrest. Just kidding. But we've cut ourselves off. I mean, when I look at Afghanistan, I can instantly identify the top 100 people. It includes about 10 people in the U.S. It includes a bunch of French and Italians and a couple of Russians. The Poles, the Norwegians, the Swedes, the South Africans. You know, it's amazing, the little centers of expertise. And citation analysis basically means that you've published something that is so well regarded by others that it's been quoted a lot in official publications, peer-reviewed journals, and so on. After 10 years of trying to get them to create a living directory of the top experts on every country and issue in the world, I've still failed. I stand before you as a failure. The U.S. government is simply not interested in indexing who knows what. Just refuses to do it. Okay? And then last, spies and secrecy. And my first book really details everything that's wrong with spies and secrecy, having been a spy. We still need spies and secrecy. There's still great evil in the world. We still need to be able to penetrate this stuff. But let me take this opportunity to say that I am just absolutely outraged that the U.S. government should presume to declare someone a combatant and strip them of their U.S. citizenship rights. That is a disaster waiting to happen. We're asking John Ashcroft, the man who spends time covering up the breasts on Greek statues, to decide who is an enemy combatant or not. This is a prescription for disaster. Now let me tell you why it's so terrible. In a conventional war, combatants wear uniforms and shoot guns and are real easy to spot. Okay? In an undercover war, you don't know. For instance, I could be technically said to have aided bin Laden, because I published an article and then a chapter in my book which says how to take down America in 24 hours. Okay? I've written the book on how to take any country down. Wynne Schwartzow, Peter Black, who died recently at a very young age, wrote a wonderful article in Wired on the top 10 targets to take down America. Are we traitors to our country? Does John Ashcroft get the right to label me a traitor to my country and call me a combatant and lock me up without my citizenship rights? That's so scary. It gives you a deeper understanding of U.S. militants and why they fear the U.S. government. Okay? You cannot allow the U.S. government to be out of control like that. And that should be a major issue in the congressional elections. I don't want to get too crazy here and say that Bush should be impeached for failing to respect the Constitution and protect the rights of the single individual citizen. But if Clinton could be impeached for a blowjob, I think this is a lot more important. Actually, I think he was impeached for lying about it. Technically, it wasn't sexual relations. The president was absolutely right. He didn't inhale either. All right, I'm going to skip over this, but this is what a citizen-driven, web-based, open-source intelligence network looks like, and the charts in my second book. But basically, you guys can self-organize. And one of the visions that I have is for every neighborhood to have its own intelligence organization. And I want to be able to type in my zip code and immediately in concentric circles see everything I care about. Disease, water security, food security, public safety, the whole bit. And having seen the situation, which includes trusted reports on what the situation is, which is a whole other issue, discussion that I had with Rob and Andy and a couple of others, I then want to be able to see, okay, who's in charge of this issue and how do I communicate with them? And who else is active on this issue and how do I communicate with them? And last but not least, before every election, I want to be able to print out a scorecard on how these people have done. And I want them to clearly understand that citizens are no longer going to be uninformed and lazy. This is actually a slide that's left over from my conference, but I've written the first two books on intelligence and the new craft of intelligence, and I've got another 8 books in planning, the first 4 of which now have guidance committees. And so I'm going to write a book every 2 years about intelligence, a specific intelligence community. My Swedish colleagues are creating a website. And so what we're going to have for each book, let's take law enforcement as an example, because
I really treasure and cherish what law enforcement can and should be. For every book, there will be a website which has the book outline. People can sign up and be in the directory of interested parties. They can upload source material. They can actually put pointers to where in the book that's relevant. And then we'll have an expert forum. We'll have a virtual library. And so each of these books is intended to become a living community that then builds bridges to other living communities. Law enforcement intelligence does not talk to national intelligence. That's one of the problems. FBI managers refuse to let Agent Rowley talk to CIA. Okay? It's worse than that. CIA and, as Mike Levine said last night, the FBI and DEA don't talk to each other. The U.S. government is full of incestuous little fiefdoms that in their arrogance believe that they can protect their turf and sacrifice the interests of the U.S. taxpayer. And that's not the desire of the good, well-intentioned people that are actually employees in the U.S. government. That is managers who have been corrupted by power. I recommend to you Norman Cousins' book, The Pathology of Power. All right. That's the end of my structured brief. I hope it hasn't worn you down. What I want to do now is introduce Akhil Collins, also known as Abu Mujahid. He has a book, and I and Robert Young Pelton have endorsed it. And what I want him to do for the next 20 or 30 minutes is talk about his perception of American intelligence and how it mishandled him. Just like Mike Levine said last night, we mishandle people. And let's see what comes out of that. It's not pre-planned or structured or whatever. And then after that, we'll probably take a five-minute break, and then we'll do kind of a free-form thing in terms of questions and answers and everything you ever wanted to know about spying but didn't know who to ask. So we'll go on. Please join me in welcoming Akhil Collins.
You know, if you go back to September and you look at the reason that Bush gave everybody...
Louder?
Can't hear.
It's a technical problem. Audio.
What about now?
No, more. No. More. Speak up a bit.
Yep. Bring the mic closer. Just need to speak up.
So anyway, you know, when Bush tells everybody that the reason why people are angry with America or want to attack America is that, what was his exact words? They hate our value, democracy, free society, way of life, and, you know, all this stuff. You know, so that's the thing that somebody out there in the world, you know, like, they love oppression or something, that they want to oppress themselves, as if there's a group of people who sit around coming up with ideas of how can they take away each other's freedom. I mean, there's a lot of weird people in the world, and they have like a lot of weird ideas, and they go about doing things differently. But in the end, I think all of them, whether they're a socialist, an Islamic rebel, a communist, or whatever, you know, they want freedom for their family. They just want to be able to, you know, get along in the world. Now, that's like, that's not making excuses for terrorism, but if you don't understand what causes people to want to blow things up, to want to attack other people, then how can you fight it? Because if you just think it's for the reasons that he gave us, you know, you're never going to get anywhere. And I guess if they hate America for all of these reasons, then how come, you know, Britain isn't being attacked, France, Australia, and all these other countries that are also free, supposedly democratic, and all of these other things. So, if you look at originally what bin Laden's problem with America was, when he left Afghanistan after the war with the Soviets, he went back to Saudi Arabia, and this was right before the war with Iraq, and he gave the King Fahd of Saudi Arabia a plan. He said, look, you know, you guys don't need America's help. We've got enough combat veterans and enough equipment and stuff to defend Saudi against Iraq or whatever. Anyway, the king told him to take a hike and that he wanted to get America involved. So anyway, bin Laden left and he went to Sudan, and that's when all of a sudden he started becoming a terrorist. Up until this point, he hadn't blown anything up. He hadn't, like, attacked anybody or anything like that. And then after Sudan, he ended up in Afghanistan. And that's when the embassy started being bombed, the towers in Saudi, the American, the warship, the USS Cole in Yemen, and all these things. So, you know, it just seems to me like he didn't originally have a problem with America. He used to be on a CIA payroll, for God's sake, you know. And then he ends up as a terrorist. Now, of course, he's committed acts of terrorism, but, you know, why did he start doing these things? Did he really have to start doing them? And today, in my hotel room, they had a thing on the Discovery Channel about the guy Kanzi, who was out front of the CIA headquarters, that started shooting people. And they said it almost as if they found it an odd idea that he had a lot of the same grievances that bin Laden has and that other radicals have with America. And, well, that's my point, that a lot of people from different backgrounds, different countries, have the same grievances with America. And then they had a guy on there, an American, prosecutor or government employee, who said, quote, "The message that we're going to send people who kill Americans is that we're going to come after you." Well, that's fine. You know, I don't expect anything different. But my question is, so when America kills other people, whether through bombs or assassinations or whatever, then what? You know, these people don't have a right to feel the same way. He's saying it, I'm going to come after you because you kill American people. Well, you know, the family of 25 people who was just killed at an Afghan wedding, you know, don't their family members feel the same way? We're going to come after you. So, you know, this isn't taking sides. One side is wrong, one side is right. It's just an idea that, you know, you kill somebody's family and they get angry with you. Am I making sense? Now, in 93, 94, 1995, I started out my international travels in Afghanistan and Kashmir. And in 95, I ended up fighting on the side of the Chechen rebels in Chechnya against the Russians. In 1996, after having been wounded and trying to get back into Chechnya again on a second trip, there was a couple incidents that went down, one of them being the tourists that were attacked or killed in Egypt, that made me sit back and, you know, think that maybe me being who I was, having been to the places that I had been, that I could offer some assistance in, fighting terrorism, people being killed in Egypt or whatever. So I approached the American intelligence, being the embassy in Azerbaijan, and I thought that I would approach the CIA and that I would offer what I had to offer and we would all get down to work. Next thing I know, I find myself back in the States working for the FBI. How that happened, I don't really know, but so to make a long story short, altogether I worked for the CIA, and then in the end, joint operations, I'm sorry, with the FBI and the in joint operations with the CIA for almost 4 years. And in 1998, while working on a joint operation with the FBI and the CIA, I was in London, and I received an invitation from bin Laden himself for me to go to his camp in Afghanistan, because obviously he and his people didn't know who I was really working for at the time. They just thought I was a radical figure. I gave the news to my my FBI handlers, and I thought that they would be as excited as I was, and the response I got was that that I should wait and see what the final answer was about him inviting me, but I wouldn't, yeah, from headquarters, but I wouldn't get my hopes up too high, whatever that meant. So message came back that a runner had been sent to Afghanistan, that I was officially invited by bin Laden, and I told my handlers about that, and they said it would never happen, to get the thought out of my mind that whatever. And, you know, I pointed out that here was the first American intelligence asset that would, you know, be close to bin Laden. And I don't think I need to tell everyone the things that could have been done with that. And they didn't want to do it. Why? Everyone asked me why. And I wish I had an answer, because it doesn't make any sense to me. After this, I decided, all right, well, I need to take some time off from you guys, because this isn't making a whole lot of sense, keeping in mind that the whole point of this operation was to send me back to Chechnya to penetrate a group there that really didn't have any bearing on any international events. It was just a Chechen rebel group fighting against the Russians. So I took some time off, and I went to Kosovo to help the Kosovars fight against the Serbs. Before getting there, I was arrested by Albanian intelligence, and it turned out that they had some information that I was involved in the Nairobi bombing, the embassy that was bombed in Nairobi. This embassy bombing took place, I think, as I was traveling to Kosovo or Albania from London. So, needless to say, I was working for the FBI at the time, and